Welcome to the More Perfect Union, a podcast about the joy we get from American politics. Hi there, I'm DJ McGuire from Virginia, self-described economic conservative, newly minted independent, and I still have that fresh smell.
And I'm Kevin Kelton, I live in Los Angeles County, I'm a Democrat on the moderate side, and I smell like I always do.
I'm Greg Matuszak from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I'll be your liberal Democrat tonight.
And I'm Jonah Knight, I am in Maryland, and I am an independent.
You can find us on the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com. We also have blogs and commentary there. You can like us at Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. And don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes and share our link on your Facebook news feed. Speaking of the news, the president actually committed some news, as we like to say, this week, where he sent out a notification to public schools, basically saying under Title IX they can no longer discriminate against transgender students. Now, as it happens, I actually went and read Title IX today because this is the stuff I do, and it made it all the more clear to me that this is largely much ado about nothing.
Can you tell us what you learned from reading it?
Step back,
and I will explain. I will explain why in terms of actual impact. Okay. This was basically an advisory letter to all the public school systems explaining what the administration policy is. But nothing actually happens until the administration sends a notification to the House and Senate Education Committees that basically says these school systems are not following the advice that we just sent, so we are now going to cut their funding. And even after that notification is sent, there has to be a 30-day period before funding is cut. So most school systems will probably take this and go, well, last we checked, we don't have any transgender students here, so we'll just put this in a file and thank everybody for their time. Where this will affect places that do have transgender students, it will be up to them to determine what they're going to do, but there will be plenty of time before an actual impact that requires an actual lawsuit, which is what a lot of people, I think, expected to happen within 5 minutes of this. The reality is, from my perspective, what this really does is it gets a lot of people to send off lovely tribal signals. It reminds most Americans that politicians like to do everything except actually fix what's wrong. But for the most part, since the president didn't really do much of anything yet, he will probably get far less criticism than his critics on the matter, who will probably sound like a bunch of complete raving lunatics. And to be fair, the president really didn't do much to deserve criticism. He just sent out this advisory saying, hey, this is our policy from here on out, so please follow it or your funding is going to be put at risk. Again, I looked at Title IX. It's an open question as to whether or not the administration actually has the power to interpret Title IX this way. The way Congress, the 92nd Congress, liked to pass legislation, they made it kind of vague and basically let the federal departments fill in the blanks, which is the administration could argue what it's doing. That's, again, I'm not a lawyer, so that's a different issue. But I guess from the politics of it, the president wins and the Republicans lose because the Republicans look like raving lunatics. And that's pretty much the way I see it.
Yeah, but let's step back even more. Didn't the Republicans start losing on this, like in North Carolina, when they started talking about bathrooms? I mean, the whole thing has been much ado about nothing, and they've been making hay about this. Like, hey, the party of small government now wants to talk about bathrooms. And now we want to talk about policing bathrooms. And now we want to make sure bathrooms. I mean, this is getting kind of ridiculous. I mean, and they lost, like, a long time ago. And whether they were doing it for political reasons or whether they truly are insane and they think that their bathrooms are under attack at any point by the transsexuals, and I'm making a scary voice there as possible, then they're crazy, right? I mean, they're the ones who lost, like, weeks ago. Or am I wrong? What do you guys think?
Well, I remember having a conversation when I was a freshman in college with some girls girls that I knew in college who were also freshmen, and the conversation was about whether it was okay to use the bathroom if someone who wasn't of your gender was also around somewhere. Not necessarily in the stall, not necessarily in the bathroom, but maybe, like, outside. And was it not polite to go inside? It was, and I guess for me, this was sort of settled when I was a freshman in college, where the result was, if you have to use the bathroom, you use the bathroom, and you just try to be polite about it. And from what we've seen so far, it's been North Carolina doubling down on being jackasses. And then hasn't, like, Texas just sort of said, wait, what? Another way we can point out that Obama's not an American? Let's say we don't want any education money.
Right.
It's those two, right? Like, those two that just don't want to be a part of this country anymore.
Anyway. I think, was it Mississippi also?
Oh, they're the third leg.
Mississippi had one.
Well. Yeah, Mississippi said, you know, if there's a chance that we can prove to the entire country that we are 50th in education for a reason, we are going to do that. We are definitely going to do that. And here's our chance. So I think they're involved somehow, peripherally at the very least.
There is a reason every other state in the union says thank God for Mississippi. I will say this, I myself do not hold to these arguments, but I know a large number of people who do. So I'm going to try to present them as best I can.
And we won't hold you to these arguments.
Yeah, don't shoot the messenger. One, there is the issue of executive overreach, whether or not the administration can actually make this sort of order, although it's not really an order, that's part of the problem, to local school systems. Again, as I read Title IX, they probably can. It's a bit vague. Congress gave and, in fact, not only gave departments the authority to enforce the law without giving them any directive as to how, but they essentially ordered them to enforce the law without giving them any direction as to how. So there was the idea was to give the departments wide latitude, and they haven't. It's federal government money, so there's that too. And we won't get into the 14th Amendment and everything, but that really completely, that also fundamentally reordered the way national and state governments deal with each other. The greater issue that I think a lot of them have, because they don't know a lot of transgender people, and I will acknowledge, I only have one interaction with a transgender woman that I know of, and that's on Facebook. If there are other two. There's a transgender man I met at a convention. Now, there may be others of which I am not aware. But they seem to think that it is fairly easy for, say, a horny teenage sophomore guy to simply walk in and say, oh, well, you know, I feel like a woman now, so that they can go in and take a look at a naked girl showering. The reality is, if you actually look at the incentives behind this, in order for a sophomore boy to try to do this sort of thing, they would have to fill out some paperwork that says they consider themselves, that he considers himself to be a woman and to be a she. And while the directive said that there is no doctor notification required for a school to accept someone who says they are transgender, there will certainly be paperwork involved, because it was a doctor, albeit a fictitious one, who reminded us that the bureaucratic mentality is the only constant in the universe. So there will be paperwork. So what you're basically telling me is that a 15-year-old boy who wants to see a girl shower in the nude is going to file a piece of paperwork that says he considers himself to be a girl, essentially have that on their record for at least a year until they, quote-unquote, change their mind, and I'm doing air quotes here, most likely for at least their entire time in high school and possibly forever, have that leaked to the general public, because it probably will be, and there will be publicity involved. And given as transgender students are not mainstreamed, and given that high school students, last I checked, still treat anything that's not mainstream with the compassion that a lion treats an animal, they're essentially going to go through a whole bunch of problems. Even if the school board agrees with their self-designation. And if the school board doesn't agree, for whatever reason, then they will have to go to court with even greater publicity and greater attention focused on it. It is far more likely that a 15-year-old boy is going to decide, you know, it's easier to just hack into my parents' internet and look at all the porn that my dad sees. That's far easier for him than to go through this entire process.
It's
the simple
far
fact
easier.
Of the matter is, the simple fact of the matter is, the incentives are all wrong. But because nobody gives a damn about incentives, because we all do tribal social signaling instead of differing on economic issues, we get this sort of utter nonsense. If people just took the time to step back and think a little, they would realize that that someone who is born a boy and decides that he wants to be a girl, or that he is actually a girl, is going through something a lot more than what they fear could happen. What they fear could happen is almost certain not to happen because the incentives are all wrong.
Right.
But they're not thinking about incentives. They're thinking with their amygdala, so we have what we have. But there are a lot of people who, frankly, are scared. I don't think they should be. And I think a lot of Republican politicians generally were of the opinion that, oh, we can basically ride this fear to some electoral victory. And what they found is that they are wrong.
Is this going to be an issue in November, like gay marriage was?
Yes.
12 years ago?
It will be the issue that leads, mark the tape, and granted, my predictive abilities are awful. But
I know, I am going to mark the tape just in case.
Yeah.
But okay.
This will lead, I believe.
Okay.
I don't think this will be much of an issue nationwide, but I do think it'll be an issue in North Carolina, and it will lead to a complete Democratic sweep.
Really?
The backlash.
Yes.
Yes,
because the Republicans thought this was a winning issue, and they're wrong. They are flat out wrong. It is not a winning issue, and you know, and it is what it is. I mean, and I know because I was in the party for 20 to 25 years. Republicans have tended to use social issues as a guise and a cover for doing whatever they wanted on economic issues. Usually, it meant screwing over the economic conservatives and ramming through tax increases and larger government and yelling about social issues in the hope that nobody noticed. Do you want to know the real reason why Bill Clinton did so well in the election of 1980 in 1998?
96? Midterms. Yes, go ahead.
Go ahead. Because if you actually, I actually remember listening to a pollster who talked about it on C-SPAN, and he said Republican in 1998, Republicans actually did very well with moderates. They did very well with women. They did well with all of the middle of the road constituents that you need to win. But their base did not show up in 1998. The reason their base did not show up is because while all the Republican elected officials were screaming at Monica Lewinsky, we knew that they were passing a budget that blew the roof on spending levels that they said they wouldn't do. We knew they were spending money like water. We got upset, and a lot of us stayed home. I didn't, but a lot of others did. And that was the reason Bill Clinton did so well in 1998, because the Republican base did not turn out because they were upset over spending issues. 18 years later, I saw this repeat itself so often that I just left the damn party. The irony is, in this case, the economic issue was stopping localities from raising the minimum wage.
Right.
And instead of actually trying to argue this issue, which frankly, a freshman-level econ student can argue against raising the minimum wage, frankly. It's not that difficult an argument to make. It just means you have to try to explain it to people who are yelling at you. No, they tacked it onto this transgender bathroom bill and hoped they could ride a wave of transgender hatred. Well, it failed spectacularly. That doesn't make it any less dehumanizing, but it does make it less successful. And in North Carolina, it will mean the party is toast.
So let me give you guys a theoretical scenario here. Let's say that Mississippi has found an avenue for some quasi-acceptable discrimination these days and decides to go with this and says, fine, take away our funding, but we're not letting them transgendered kids use the bathroom at all or some stupid thing like that. What recourse, if any, does the federal government have should an entire state decide that transgendered population, maybe the gay population, just can't use the bathrooms that they're supposed to use?
You mean, would the federal government actually cut
I don't know.
Funding,
I mean,
off to universities?
To, like, all of Mississippi.
Public schools? Well, from what I understand, it doesn't start. It's not like there's a giant check that ends. From what I understand, it goes in stages. Like, universities, of course, will start. And then there's highways and things like that.
So let's say a university.
No. Whoa. Yeah, you're... It is, and again, this is why I read the title. It is specifically directed at those entities that actually violate the law. So it would be cutting off aid to any public school district that defies the law. The state of Mississippi can say, "We're not going to let anybody do it, and we'll give up all the money." But in districts that don't have transgender students, it's not going to be an issue because the administration cannot say that a school district is denying access to transgender students if the district doesn't have any transgender students.
Mm. Right.
So it'll only be, you know, it will have to be someone in Jackson who says, "I am a transgender student and I'm having this denied to me." Then Jackson Public Schools loses its funding. If Mississippi State University says, "We're not going to do this," and a transgender student in Mississippi says, "They have denied me my rights," then funding can be removed. What most districts will do, even in Mississippi, they'll just say, "Look, we don't give a damn what the governor or the attorney general says. We just don't have any transgender students. And we'll gladly comply if we had any, but we don't." And then you're going to get into the issue of,
How do you know?
Not just that. Well, that's also true. I mean, there's a whole bunch of Byzantine stuff involved here. But it's not going to be a matter of Washington simply cutting off all aid to a state's public school system.
No.
They're not going to do that in no small part because even in a state like Mississippi, there will probably be a couple of jurisdictions that say, "Look, we would gladly accommodate transgender students if we had any." You know, yes, even Mississippi has liberals and Democrats in it. And you don't need to be a liberal or Democrat on this issue, or a liberal Democrat, to want to accommodate transgender students either. But it's going to be an issue of district by district. Some district is going to try to sue over this. And then it's going to go through the courts. The courts will make a decision. If a school system essentially says, "No, we'd rather give up federal funding," about the only thing that could be done is if the administration decides, "Well, by our interpretation of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, discriminating against transgender is sex discrimination." They haven't gotten there yet. This administration may try to get there. Most likely, this administration will be out of office before this sort of thing actually happens. It'll be a matter of what the next administration wants to do.
Yeah, we're getting really granular, I just wanted to point out we might want to get.
And that's the thing. This is how this stuff works. You're talking about intergovernmental relations. How one government deals with.
Yeah,
another
I know, but I just
want to
talk about pedophiles.
Stuff gets granular.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. Okay.
I'm chiding you, DJ. You laid it out beautifully, and even though it was in many cases a little bit over my head on the legality, everything you're saying I'm sure is correct. It's just that, you know, for us, I think talking about the social aspect of it is more interesting. I mean, I'm going to make a point. This is probably dumb, but I'm going to make it because it's just kind of interesting to talk about. As you guys know, a lot of people who are against this law feel that it's somehow going to empower potential pedophiles to dress up as women and go into public restrooms so that they can scope out potential targets.
I've read that.
And, aside from the ludicrousy of that, because pedophiles can just... you know, follow somebody into a bathroom. I mean, if you think about any restaurant you've ever been in, the restrooms are all down a hallway someplace, generally obscured from public view, usually in a small alcove. And anybody that saw, I hate to say this, anybody that saw a little girl, or a little boy for that matter, go into a bathroom and decided that they wanted to, you know, prey on them, would just do it. They don't need to dress up in women's clothing to do it. So again, going back to what DJ was pointing out before, the motivation just isn't there.
And the thing is, again, we are once again forgetting what this directive, the directive itself, and again, Kevin, you may be thinking about HB2 North Carolina.
Yes.
The directive itself was about students. Now, if we're going to declare 16 and 17-year-olds as already pedophiles, then that means that these people have entree into the human mind that I don't know about, because, you know, most 16 and 17-year-olds haven't had sex. I mean, the last time a majority of 17-year-olds were not virgins was 1991. Okay, since then, a majority of kids that age are actually virgins. So the idea that we can declare a population that is majority virgin, we know that there are pedophiles here, 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 and here. Yeah, good luck to you. If you could actually read minds, if these people could actually read minds that well, they've already known a long time ago that they were spectacularly failing in convincing anybody to their point of view, and they'd be much better at politics than they actually are.
I was going to say, speaking of spectacular failures.
Yeah, Kevin, summarize.
Yesterday, Nevada had its 106th caucus this year. And frankly, I don't understand why states keep having caucus after caucus after caucus. But as people will remember, the third major contest in the Democratic primary this year was the Nevada caucus. Hillary Clinton won it narrowly and came away with about a 5-delegate lead. But because of the Byzantine rules and systems of all these various state parties, then you have to go to a state convention and you have to elect like 600 and, you know, delegates on this side and 700 on that side, just to come back to where you apportion the delegates for the state. Yesterday, apparently, there was some violence and then a raucous conclusion to the Nevada State Convention that the Bernie Sanders people are saying is indicative of how Hillary Clinton has stolen the whole primary campaign away from them. And what it boils down to is this, and we can talk about what went on there, but for anybody who reads Real Clear Politics, and I'm sure all of us go there almost daily, ever since the Nevada caucus, they had Hillary Clinton coming out with a 5-point advantage in Nevada. I think it was 20-15. After this whole thing happened yesterday, Hillary Clinton has a 5-point delegate advantage in Nevada. Nothing changed. So all of the noise, all of the wailing and the great videos that people got on their cell phones with teenage girls or college girls crying, they're stealing my vote, I can't believe this is happening to us, it's the end of democracy. Basically, what happened was there were about 64 people that showed up that wanted to be Sanders delegates that either had not registered properly by May 1st, which is not that long ago. It wasn't like they, you know, New York, where they were required to change their registration, you know, 6 months earlier. They hadn't changed their registration as of May 1st, or there were about 8 of them that did not, excuse me, or there was another group that did not have the proper identification. What ended up happening is, of those 64, about 56 of them ultimately were not allowed to be seated. 6 or 8 of them were seated after they showed the proper credentials. Also, let me add that the same thing happened to some Hillary Clinton supporters. About 8 of them were denied certification by the state party. So the Sanders people wrote this report, this minority report that they wanted entered into the official blah, blah, blah. It was entered into, but the minority report was not adopted because it was not sound by the rules of the state party. They basically were saying, we want our people in anyways. And the state party said, no, they're not going to be state delegates. And then this was all getting very late in the second day. And at around a few minutes before 10 p.m. at the the Paris Hotel in Vegas, where they rented out these rooms, the security heads of the Paris Hotel told them, hey, listen, we can't give you security anymore. This is getting too raucous, too out of control. Close it up immediately. Put these things to bed. You've overstayed your welcome. Your rental is through. Close the meetings. And so the woman who was the chairman of the Democratic Party running, the chairman of the event, did this final motion to adjourn. She said, the ayes have it, meeting adjourned, and they got out of there because security told them they had to get out of there. So all of the hand-wringing that you're seeing online, on Facebook and then Reddit and other social media, and I'm sorry I've gone on so long, is just more of the smoke and mirrors of the Bernie Sanders people wailing over stuff that, when you look at it objectively, was not a controversy. Okay, I'm off my soapbox. Go ahead.
Look, you know, one of the things that I've been going on and on and on about is there are rules to the primary. And the primary rules are different from general rules. And there are registrations. Primaries are not necessarily for independents. Independents have their own votes. And we have seen this over and over and over with the Bernie Sanders campaign people, where they're coming to these primaries and they're like, what? This is unbelievable. These rules. No, wait, that's not how you say it. These rules. No, wait, it's rules. R-U-L-E-S. And then they're shocked by them. Dates? We have to register? I mean, it's a broken record. At every term, and if it's not the actual Sanders campaign, which a lot of this is not at this point, except for the superdelegates don't count thing. Don't get me started on that. But it's the people who are, this is their first time voting, and they think everything is neat. They believe every meme on the internet. And it's just ridiculous. And every time you try to explain something, they go, no, you don't understand how this works.
Right.
And if I had a nickel for every time, you know, someone under 30, and yes, I'm an ageist, told me that I didn't understand, you know, democracy, or I didn't understand how the republic was going to fall, or I didn't understand progressivism, or I didn't understand some term from my eighth grade social studies class, because I'm not a Bernie Sanders fan. You know, I mean, I would be, well, one, I wouldn't be doing a podcast now. I'd be racing foreign cars. But, I mean, it's getting kind of old, and we've had like 10 months of this now. Read a rule book.
Here's the thing. First of all, the reason that they, and as someone who had been active in the Republican Party for a number of years, there are usually at least three levels of conventions. There's a county convention, county city convention, a district convention, and a state convention. And I'm pretty sure that Nevada set theirs up the same way. Mm-hmm. Now, Nevada is apparently choosing, as I understand it, to force their state delegates to vote the way the beauty contest in the county conventions went. They didn't have to do that. And frankly, the Bernie people should be happy that they did do that. Otherwise, Hillary probably would have won with 3/4 or 4/5 of the delegates in the county at the state convention, because they're better at organizing. But the simple fact of the matter is that conventions are difficult to understand for someone who has not gone through it before. And it is up to the campaigns to explain to their people, look, this is the form you have to fill out. Check these boxes. Make sure you're at this place with this location. I've gone through Republican mass meetings, Republican state conventions, Republican county conventions and such, and the various candidates whether you're running for county for chairman of the county party or whether you're running for United States senator, you have to make sure that your campaign has educated your supporters on what they have to do in order to get in the building. And if they don't have what they need to get in the building, that is on you, the campaign, for not educating them properly. It is not on your opponent for somehow gaming the system. And unfortunately, what I think Bernie is actually, what the Bernie campaign, Sanders campaign is trying to do is they're trying to play a, is pull a page out of Donald Trump's playbook. Because when Trump got beaten in the North Dakota caucuses and in the Colorado caucuses, he played the fixes in game. Like, oh, these conventions, they are against the will of the people. It's better to do primaries and blah, 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 woof, woof, whatever. And it helped Trump in the New York primary. It helped Trump in all the future primaries. And I think Bernie's campaign, I'm guessing here, is that the Sanders campaign is hoping for something similar in California. Because really the only way the Sanders campaign has any life at all is if they get a smashing victory in California and challenge Clinton's credibility as a potential nominee. I'm not saying it'll work, one, because I don't think he'll win California. But that's the only card they have left to play, so they're going to do everything to play it.
So you're saying maybe, perhaps, that Sanders is actually, maybe, perhaps, and I don't want to say this bluntly, but okay, he's running a campaign of ignorance?
Well,
no, I mean, I'm trying to dance around this in a nice way, because, I don't dislike, I just did a rant, but that was mostly about his supporters. Because
To answer your question, Greg, and admittedly I'm looking at this from the outside.
Sure.
I think his campaign is not as organized as hers.
Okay, sure.
And he is turning, and he is attempting, much like Trump turned that weakness into a virtue in his when he dealt with it against Cruz, Sanders is hoping that he can turn his weakness into a virtue against Clinton. Headed into the California primary.
Well, that's fair.
I think that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah, okay. I feel you.
Well, go ahead, John.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say that what we've seen is this whole cycle is just incredible. So Trump is not really a Republican, and Sanders is not really a Democrat.
That's and very what true.
We've seen a lot of similarities between them, and we talk about them. But one of them is that neither of them really understand the rules. And what I've discovered about myself is that I am no longer tolerant of presidential candidates who get months into the process and then they say, wait, the rules are what? Why didn't anyone tell me what the rules were? And I think that it's kind of funny and it's kind of amusing. And then you realize that these people are idiots. And that they're incompetent and should not be where they are. And whether that means that it doesn't mean that I think that everything Bernie Sanders is saying is ridiculous and shouldn't be listened to, but he's certainly not a Democrat, and he got here because people don't like Hillary Clinton, and Donald Trump got to where he is because there was no obvious front runner. And he has whatever magic he has in his pants that got him to that point.
I would say Kevin and Greg can talk about Bernie vis-a-vis the Democrats. Oh. I can say, unfortunately, that while Donald Trump may not have cared what political party he was in until he decided to run for president, the campaign that he has run and the things that he has said has appealed to far too many Republicans for my taste. And it tells me, unfortunately, how easy how tribal the Republican Party has become, and how easy it is for someone who is outside the party to come in and say the right things, or they were the wrong things for me, but they're the right things for them, and essentially become accepted as one of them. It is a sign of the multiple weaknesses in the Republican Party and what sadly the Republican Party has become that Donald Trump could ingratiate himself with them so quickly. Well, the reason Bernie Sanders, I think, well, I'll leave it to Kevin and Greg to talk about why Bernie Sanders couldn't do that.
Let me jump, because this may make you feel better. And this is my theory. This actually ties into our next point. Why am I so hooping mad? One of my theories on Sanders and how he is even so close, okay, is they're not, you know, I don't believe he's a Democrat. You just can't be an independent for, what, 26 years? And yes, you do caucus with the Democrats, but he's not. He's an independent, and he should have run as an independent. And I think a lot of his support is independent. Okay, and that's fine, and that's great, and I understand how the caucuses work, and I understand that we have a lot of new people coming in, and we've seen how many people he's brought in now as Democrats. But I think the same, I don't want to speak for Republicans, but I think the same goes with the Trumps. I don't think when you just said there's too many Republicans that are now voting for him, I think there's a lot of those that were independents or, you know, somethings, you know, maybe non-voters before. And so it doesn't bother me when they say, well, you know, Sanders is so close, but not really in my mind, because they weren't Democrats.
Well,
they were independents.
Okay. I mean, I've heard that theory put forth. I happen to be someone that ascribes to the theory that they're yin and yang and that they're just simply opposite sides of the same spectrum, that they're both appealing to disaffected voters just in different ways. Whether I'm right or not, you know, political science people will figure out, you know, in a couple of dozen years. First of all, I want to go back to something that DJ said before I go on my little rant. DJ, the problem with the Republican Party is that, unlike you, you have a core. But the GOP does not have a core. And that's why it is susceptible to somebody like Donald Trump. I'm not saying that everyone in the GOP doesn't have a core. There are many people like you. There are many true conservatives. But they have been overwhelmed by people who just, A, hate Hillary Clinton and want someone who can beat her, or B, just want somebody who is going to take apart the entire system. So that's why this has happened. This is not some great sociological phenomenon that you need to be, you know, Margaret Mead to study, okay? People are just, they're just pissed off. They don't like politics. They don't understand politics. They don't like the news they watch. And they just want somebody to go in there and muck up the system so they can have a big laugh that, you know, Mitch McConnell and or Nancy Pelosi's lives have been made miserable by them. That's my theory of his appeal in the Republican Party.
There's a lot to be said for that.
But I want to go back now to the Hillary Bernie thing, because this was something that I really wanted to speak about tonight, which is why I am so now personally angry at both Bernie Sanders and his supporters. And from what I'm sensing on social media, where I spend a lot of time, a lot of Hillary supporters have now gotten to the angry stage. Here's my feeling on it. Look, Hillary Clinton at one point had a 66% approval rating. That's when she was Secretary of State. Okay. Didn't last. But she left her job at Secretary of State around 59% approval rating, okay, which is not bad for a public figure. She's been voted the most admired woman in America 20 times. You know, these are real things. Then the campaign started. Now, some other things happened as well, and they're legitimate. The email scandal is legitimate. The, you know, the Benghazi thing, although I don't think that she is personally responsible for it. That was a horrible thing that happened under her watch, and on some level she's responsible for where we are now with Libya. And this is true with a lot of legitimate issues about the Obama administration's foreign policy or her vote on the Iraq War, all of that stuff. But, you know, back in March or April of 2015, she still was in the black in positive negatives. She still had a better approval rating than a disapproval rating. What I think knocked her down, other than the email scandal, which is, again, a legitimate argument to make, is that instead of just taking incoming hits from the GOP, she's now got a second front that is fighting her just as hard from her left flank, and she's got two fronts driving her negatives down, and that's why she's in a place now where it's conceivable that she could lose this election. And I happen to be of the opinion that, look, Bernie Sanders has every right to run for the Democratic nomination. He has every right to continue to run through the primaries. But when you look at this, he knows what we know. Bernie Sanders is as smart, if not smarter, than anyone on this. Well, maybe not as smart as DJ, but he's smarter than the rest of us on this on this podcast. And he knows the delicate math. He knows that he's not going to overturn her lead in pledged delegates. He knows he's not going to flip 200 or 300 superdelegates. He's running because, A, he started something that he doesn't know how to stop. B, his ego has gotten way in the way of it, and he's got people telling him how great he is and how he's got to keep going. And C, because when you're a politician, that's what you do. You fight until you lose. And that is a legitimate thing for him to do. But at this point, he is kneecapping the person who is going to be the Democratic standard bearer to go up against Donald Trump. And it pisses me off that he is still actively driving up her negatives. There is a way for him to prosecute this campaign. He should be running against Trump. He should be talking about unification of the party more so than he is, and he's not doing it. I think, frankly, I'll have to say this to give him one little bit of credit. I think the reason that he changed California campaign managers last week was because of that travesty that happened at the Hillary Clinton event that I happened to have been at the week before, where the Sanders supporters got far out of line. And I think that Sanders is seeing now that he has created a monster that he can't control. And he's trying to, but he's doing it too timidly, and it's getting away from him. And we're getting to a point where, just like in Nevada yesterday, these people are going to go to Philadelphia. They are going to lose. They are going to be sore losers. They are going to create a horrible optics situation for the Democratic Party. And then, no matter what he does, they're going to continue to run against the Democratic ticket. They are the reason that we may have a Trump presidency. The Democratic Party is the only people that can beat the Democratic Party. The divided Republican Party with Trump at the head of it cannot defeat the Democrats. The Green Party cannot defeat the Democrats. Jill Stein cannot defeat the Democrats. Gary Johnson and the Libertarians cannot defeat the Democrats. Socialists cannot defeat the Democrats. The only people that can steal this election from us or our fellow Democrats, and that's what's pissing me off.
Okay, Jonah, go on.
I just want to add one point, is that the only area that I'll really disagree with you on is that I don't think he is a Democrat. And if he were, he would have been before this election began. And I think that that's why...
Well, I agree with you, but he says, look, I'm running for the Democratic nomination. I'm a Democrat. I'll give him that benefit of the doubt.
I'll just say,
if you will all excuse me before I chime in, I definitely need another beer.
Well, I think, who do you want to have a beer
my
with?
My wife and I were talking about this, about whether or not he was really a Democrat in his, you know, about the idea of, once the primary is over, will he actually go out and try to help her win? And I think that's where we find out.
Well,
I don't think he is. I think that if Hillary wins, because of these reasons that you've laid out, Kevin, it's not because of the Democratic Party. It's because the liberal independents or the liberal progressive disaffectives are angrier than we thought previously. And I don't, just like it's not necessarily the Republican establishment that's bringing Trump into power, it's not the Democratic establishment that's doing the damage to Hillary Clinton.
So I have I agree everything with Jonah, and I'm glad he said it so I didn't have to, because I don't think he's a Democrat, and I agree completely. The thing is, I think that we'll find out in June at the DNC in Philadelphia, the night, because I think Democrats are smarter than the Republicans were 4 years ago, because they will give him an entire night. Like, it'll be, you know, the Bernie Sanders night, and he'll bring up all his friends and family, and he'll pick the band. It'll probably be Jane will make a speech. The kids will make a speech. His good friend Susan Sarandon will make a speech. Everyone. And then it will all hinge on his speech. If he sits there and pisses and moans about, oh, you know, we fought the good fight, but, you know, her. And if he rolls his eyes a lot and say, hey, people, don't give up, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, then it's screwed.
Well, that's the Kennedy speech from 1980. You know, the dream lives on, yeah. Whatever it yeah. was, you know.
Right. But if he sits there and says, hey, you know what? We're going to beat Trump, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this together, and we're going to be a better nation because Hillary Clinton, she's it. She's the real deal. And her vice president, you know, we got this. We're together. And I know you keep thinking it's going to be Elizabeth Warren, but it's not.
It's going to be one of those two. It's going to be one of those two.
It's not. It's not. You got a better chance of it being Al Franken.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you guys this. Forget about who it's going to be. Do you guys okay. think that Warren is lobbying for the job? Because I do.
Not at all. Not at
no,
all.
I don't think so. I think she's just pissed.
Can I?
And she's just...
Let me okay. make my case on
all right.
this. Wait, let me make my case, DJ, and then you can jump in.
Okay, go ahead.
That's fine. You make your okay. case. I can drink okay. some more.
Yeah. First of all...
I wish I would have got a beer.
Okay, so now the topic is, does Elizabeth Warren want to be offered the vice presidency? And here's my case. First of all, she has never specifically turned it down. And if she was so happy in the Senate, she would just say, no, I have no interest in that. Number two, this thing that she's doing with Donald Trump, the Twitter war, is clearly an audition to show what kind of a bulldog vice presidential pit bull, I should say, candidate she would be. There's no other reason for her to be having these arguments with Donald Trump on Twitter. And that article that was in Politico the other day, talking about how it just seemed to hit, you know, come into the zeitgeist that Joe Biden wanted her to be his vice presidential nominee, and he thinks she'd make a great candidate or running mate for Hillary Clinton.
I think
these things don't just
candidate.
Happen. That
she
got leaked.
A great candidate
that
for
got
Joe Biden.
Leaked. I'm telling
she
you guys, she wants it badly.
Biden.
All right, all right, all right. You all had your fun. A couple things. First, Samuel Adams Summer Collection. Don't buy it. All the beers suck.
Oh, okay.
Secondly, as far as Hillary's weaknesses are, I'm going to go back a bit and just say this once.
Oh, wait. We don't have time for all of her weaknesses. So.
My point is, we're all talking about how close Bernie came and blah, 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 and all this other nonsense. Okay. If an actual Democrat had stayed in the race and run against her, he or she may be beating her right now. Martin O'Malley must be kicking himself in the head. Thirdly, and to
well, who is this actual
Kevin's
Democrat
point,
going to be? Martin O'Malley didn't win a single delegate in Iowa. Jim Webb had no traction. Who was this Democrat
well,
going to
no,
be?
It wasn't going to be Jim Webb. But look, my point is Bernie. There were a lot of reasons why Bernie Sanders had no chance in hell of winning the nomination. For him to do as well as he did, he didn't cause Hillary's weaknesses. He exposed them and he reflected them. That's what that is showing. Thirdly.
You're wrong, but go ahead.
And this is thirdly. Oh, that's quite all right. I'm wrong. Thirdly, the idea. Yes. I would say Elizabeth Warren definitely wants to be the vice presidential nominee because it's far easier than actually running for re-election in Massachusetts, a state where she ran 15 points behind Barack Obama in 2012 and would have to go into a 10-year-ish midterm election in a state that has a relatively popular Republican governor. Elizabeth Warren doesn't want to do that because, frankly, she's a bad candidate. She may be a decent senator, she may be good in Twitter wars and everything, but in terms of actually getting people to show up and vote, she was probably the worst Massachusetts Democrat not named Martha Coakley. She'd love to have to not to worry about that and be the vice presidential nominee. And that's one of the reasons why Hillary Clinton should not do it at all, ever. The simple fact of the matter is, I still hold that there's really only one way Hillary Clinton can lose this election, and that is if she dies before Election Day. And I don't want that to happen. I would rather she live. If she lives, she wins. But
I am so sending you a Hillary t-shirt, by the way.
She will greatly diminish her margin of victory if she selects Elizabeth Warren, and I will tell you why. Because Donald Trump's entire bizarre craziness that he has done is essentially turning the Republican Party into the big government for white people party. And it is about white angst, in particular rural white angst, in particular rural white male angst. That's his thing. That's his shtick. Okay. Nominating as your vice president a woman who claimed Native American ancestry to get a tenured position at Harvard University essentially checks every single box that Donald Trump needs to motivate his base to 150%, or, to use the Spinal Tap term, ramps it up to 11. She is the last person Hillary Clinton wants to nominate. You want a nominee that eats into Trump's base, not someone that motivates it to vote like nobody's business. Elizabeth Warren will keep beating up on Trump no matter whether she gets nominated for vice president or not. Let Elizabeth Warren beat Donald Trump up and keep her in Massachusetts so that, because I guarantee you, if she gets nominated, Donald Trump will throw out the Pocahontas stuff so often that she will actually be called Elizabeth F. Warren by mistake. It is better to leave her in Massachusetts, pick a Julian Castro, or pick one of the Sanchez sisters in California, somebody that can gin up the Mexican-American vote again a little more, maybe even if you think the Mexican-American vote is ginned up enough because they're upset at Trump, fine. Go with a rising African-American star. Put a little color on the ticket. Elizabeth Warren doesn't solve that problem. In fact, Elizabeth Warren gives additional problems. It's not going to be her. It should not be her. And that's all I have to say.
And my counter to that, Al Franken. My counter to that, because he checks off so many boxes.
Al Franken, come on.
He checks off so many boxes. Yeah. My counter to that is she's going to have the African American and the minority vote. She's going to have the Latino vote. She is going to, and she will get her share of independence. She needs to shore up her base. She needs a unified party. If it's not Sanders, it's got to be Warren. If she picks somebody like, first of all, I happen to think that Julian Castro looks like he was picked for the exact reason that you guys want him to be picked. And I think it would just look, the optics of it would be awful. Nobody thinks this guy is ready to be president of the United States. And secondly, you know, Sherrod Brown or Tim Kaine raising hands with her in victory at the end of the Democratic convention is to me just a yawn. And she needs somebody that can gin up excitement in the base. You know, it's not just about turning out voters. As you well know, DJ, and if Emily was here, everybody here knows this, you would agree, it's about getting the people out who were passionate enough to hit the phone lines, to canvass, to sit in the malls and register voters.
Yes.
And you get that with an energized base. You don't get that from independent voters.
Yes, but you energize both bases with Elizabeth Warren. The key is to energize your base and not energize their base.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Warren energizes their base.
Anybody can energize the conservative base any more than Hillary Clinton. You don't need more of a reason to vote against Hillary Clinton.
Oh, no, 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 no. That just shows that you don't. That shows that you don't know them, which used to be us. Believe me. If she nominates Elizabeth Pocahontas Warren, that will, like I said, that'll dial it up to 11. She needs someone who, yes, will motivate her base, but doesn't necessarily motivate the Republican base any more than it's already motivated. You're right. There are a lot of people who will just hold their nose to vote against Hillary Clinton. But there are a lot of others that will either just sit this one out or won't do anything, particularly in those rural areas. But I guarantee you this, Greg.
Yes.
Do you have any family members who are leery of Trump and may not actually vote in this election?
Yes, I have several, actually.
Okay, how many of them are going to stay on the fence if Pocahontas is nominated for vice president?
Oh, gosh, they will be in with both feet. They
Thank
will
you.
Be in with both feet.
I rest my case.
I mean, it would be as if Bernie Sanders and Clinton teamed up together, but it's a female Bernie Sanders. You get my point.
Wait, you're saying that they would be in with both feet to vote against Hillary
Clinton? Yeah. I mean, you're suggesting Warren because it's similar to Sanders. Okay, and the conservatives and the GOP is now saying those are the two things that we don't want: a female Sanders.
Oh boy, I just read the electorate differently, but I respect your opinions.
No, I mean, but then again, I have some family that just hates these people. Just hates these people.
Okay.
And they've actually even mentioned Warren by name. I throw out those names just to upset them sometimes.
Okay, well, with
with
a couple of minutes left, do we want to talk about any of the Trump news of the week? There was the Ryan Trump convocation or whatever that was.
Okay. I want to talk about the Ryan Trump meeting because now I get to be pissed off.
I'm fascinated by that. And because Ryan went to Miami University, I don't know.
Now I have been less enamored of Paul Ryan than most people, particularly after the two Ryan Murray budget deals of 13 and 15. And of course he did support the bank bailout, which really annoys me. But Donald Trump has basically been beating up Paul Ryan for his entire campaign. He doesn't agree with Ryan on trade, he doesn't agree with Ryan on entitlements. They're a bit closer on immigration than either of them likes to let on, but they send out different tribal signals.
And tax policy.
Yeah, well, and tax policy now, because Trump showed his true colors again. But the simple fact, they still came out of this with this notion of a very positive step towards unification. The only thing good about that was they actually mentioned unification, which means for those of us who are Firefly fans, I can now say I'm a brown coat and I'm with Malcolm Reynolds.
And it worked out well for the brown coats, by the way.
In any event, but this shows more than anything else how, and you know, and I got to hand it to Kevin. He said the GOP has no core. And he's right. The leadership of the party does not have a true north. And for Paul Ryan to basically come out and say, yeah, we are making the first steps towards unifying the party, it just says that it's all about the tribalism, it's all about the label, and nothing about the substance. And it just shows that they have essentially surrendered to Trump, and that they are more than willing to have Trump either reshape the party as the party of big government for white people, or for economic conservatives like me, we were just the fools all the time, and that's what it's always been. I'm not sure which one it is. I just know neither of which is an excuse for me to stay in the party. It's why I left. But I just hope that folks who are still in the party and we're still hoping that it can be the vehicle to limit government's size, scope, and cost, we'll remember this meeting, we'll remember this Thursday, where these two got together, and Paul Ryan, who was supposed to be the thinking man's conservative, who was supposed to be the guy who was going to lead economic conservatives to the promised land and all that sort of stuff, and who was supposedly Jack's camp disciple, and all of it, basically chucked it all off the ship for Donald Trump. These people don't actually believe in anything, and Paul Ryan just effing proved it. And that's what I want everyone to remember, and that's why I'm so upset. But at the very least, it confirms that I did the right thing in leaving the party, and it lets me throw out a brown coat reference, so it can't be all bad. But I'm still upset.
Well, they do believe in one thing, which is winning and maintaining power. And I know that Democrats have been accused of being power hungry for as long as I've been an adult. But, you know, this goes back to the old, I think it was Will Rogers quote, you know, I don't belong to any organized political party. I'm a Democrat. Republicans always coalesce, they come together, and they say, let's just make the most out of a bad situation and protect as many seats as possible. This is all about protecting the Senate, protecting the House, because they don't know how to run by not embracing their presidential nominee. This was talked about for a couple of weeks in April, this idea of, well, they can run, but let him kind of, you know, drown on his own while they're protecting their Senate races. And they don't know how to do that. So what they've decided to do is, let's throw in with this guy, let's hope that he can help us at least hold the Senate and not lose too many House seats. And who knows, maybe we'll get lucky, we'll, you know, the Democrats will self-destruct, and this guy will get elected, and we'll deal with that headache later. That's what it's about for them.
There was an interesting article in Ohio. I've got to try to find it in one of the Ohio papers about how a lot of the Ohio congressmen and Senate, some have and some haven't endorsed, and they don't know how they're going to run a campaign without endorsing the president because they're so used to.
Right. There's no method for
that. Right. And they're so used. And how do you say, you know, come out and vote, but ignore that thing at the top. Just, you know, vote for us, and you know Republican, but not that Republican, this Republican, and ignore the craziness. And buying airtime in Ohio is just insane, you know, on a presidential year. So a lot of these guys are like, how are we going to do that? The Trump campaign is already lining up to buy everything, you know.
Well, of course, there is one possible savior for the Republicans that would bring it all together in a nicely wrapped package, and that's if
a meteor that hits Chappaqua.
Well, that would be second to the rumor this week that Donald Trump has high on his list of possible VP nominees Sarah Palin, which I don't even believe, but it makes for delicious gossip.
Well, that's actually going to be my closeout question before we wrap up here. So I will ask the group, starting with Kevin. Kevin, who do you think the two vice presidential nominees will be?
Well, of course, I've already said that I think it's going to be Warren or Sanders on the Democratic side. I'll stick with that, even if I get proved wrong. I truly have no idea on the Republican side. For a while, I thought it might be Jeff Sessions because Trump had made some overtures to the idea that he wants someone who's well-versed in the politics of Capitol Hill. And certainly Jeff Sessions is very, you know, loyal to him. But then there's all the arguments about him picking a woman, picking a Latino, picking a... I truly have no idea, nor do I care. We're going to be running against Trump. We're going to defeat Trump.
Fair enough. Greg?
You know, Ben Carson just released five names that he believes, you know, because, you know, they're tight now. And he's put Ben Carson in charge of this.
Yeah, he's the guy running the committee, right? So, okay. So
right,
what were his
right.
five names?
So, Ben... Sarah Palin was on the list, and so was John McCain. John Kasich was on the list. And Kasich has already said, yeah, that's just not going to happen.
Right.
And McCain, I think, is a really funny one, too. But the one... And I can't remember the fourth one, but the one that really caught my eye, and the one that I was like, there it is. That's the one that shines, is Jan Brewer.
Oh, would she be a horrible running mate? I pray he picks Jan
golden.
Brewer.
That's golden. This is a woman who there's pictures of her and her finger right in that Obama's face, and she's telling him what she's telling him. It doesn't matter. But she's telling him, and she's wagging her finger like, you build that wall for me because I'm just done with this. I mean, this is it.
Oh,
that's her.
That would be golden.
I mean,
okay.
That's her.
Jonah.
Yeah. Far, we've talked about Hillary enough.
Yeah.
I mean,
Jonah.
No.
Jonah.
Yeah.
Your selection.
So I really have no idea. I'm really clueless. But I think that both vice presidential picks are going to have something in common, and that is, they're not going to really pull focus. I think that they're going to be quietly qualified and off in the corner. And I think that somebody like Sarah Palin or somebody like Elizabeth Warren, they're going to draw too much of the spotlight to them, and I think that neither of these presidential candidates wants that. I think they want someone who's like, oh, yeah, they're fine, and then give them a mission off in Nevada somewhere.
Like a Dan Quayle?
Yeah, but okay. Then just, like, don't have the press follow him around at all, and it'll be fine.
Let me just make one quick comment before you go, DJ. Just one quick comment on this idea of somebody pulling the spotlight from Hillary Clinton. I happen to think that in this particular election, it's to her advantage to have a kind of high-profile running mate, because any day that Donald Trump is talking about someone other than Hillary Clinton is a plus day for her. Okay, go ahead.
And I would say I actually think on the Republican side it will probably be Brewer that Trump nominates, because that's his method of jacking up his base. Brewer's a disaster, and I'm actually going to say I believe Clinton will actually nominate U.S. Senator Cory Booker as her running mate.
Really?
So, with that, I would remind everyone...
Cory Booker's a superhero.
Deval Patrick.
With that, I would remind everyone to find us at the web at moreperfectunionpodcast.com, where we also have blogs and commentary. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast. Rate and review us on iTunes, and don't forget to share our link on your Facebook newsfeed. That's all we have for us this week. Until the madness next week, thank you and good night.
Clinton Booker 2016.